For July the 13th, 2018, we talk about Persona 4, Dancing All Night, the Sonic Toaster, and we ask you which game's pre-release hype tripped you up the most. Tricked ya. Welcome to Level 248. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Jella Prentice.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. After a week off for the 4th of July here in the States, we also have what I believe is the least common combination.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. But I appreciate both of you hopping on this bright summer day to talk about video games. And such. Jala, before we hopped on, you said you had been doing a bunch of stuff you wanted to talk about here in the opening. So what you been up to?
I've been up to some things. So I participated in a 4th of July Go Ruck Light event. That was super cool. A Go Ruck Light is a rucking event where you carry a weight in a pack and also various heavy things and go in directions for time. And then you do PT and stuff. And this particular one, it was so hot outside that somebody got heat stroke, so we ended up dialing it back, going under the trees, and it ended up being a very, very easy event because Go-Ruck lights are not designed for people to fail. Like, they want everybody to be able to earn their patch and do everything. So while she was recovering, we were learning about the history of militia and everything, because since this is a 4th of July themed event, they were talking about, you know, how the war was fought, how it was won. And then we actually simulated this with water balloon fight, where
only the most, like, historically accurate
and refreshing.
Yeah, basically. Well, the thing is that we were stuck in regiments, you know, as if we were the Redcoats. Uh-huh. And then we first did, like, a round where it was just everybody's Redcoats and everybody stands in a row. And, like, you get two water balloons, and you can only throw one every 30 seconds because that's how long it would take them to reload their rifles or whatever. And so we did that. And then one side and then the other was the militia, which meant that you could do totally guerrilla warfare tactics, and yet the Redcoats had to stay in their regiments and everything because that's how it was.
Oh, and you totally got the better end of the deal because you got to get hit by water balloons.
Yeah, well, then there's that, too.
alternate history.
Right. Well, then after we did that for a while, we still had water balloons left. So what we did is we all went in a single line, and then one person from one team had to do 10 8-count bodybuilders for time and then go into the middle and run and grab a water balloon and then kill the other person with the water balloon.
Right.
But, you know, before they got to it, and it was like, you know, our single dual combat kind of thing. So,
going way back.
So that was a thing that we were doing, and it was fun. I didn't die either of the times that I was up against somebody. Nice. Although the first time was funny because I was up against this little girl who was like the daughter of one of the guys who's like a ruck training leader for like his group somewhere in Oklahoma. And like his daughter is this tiny little, like, she is a statewide champion runner. So okay. She's tiny, tiny, tiny. And she was doing 8-count bodybuilders against me. And, you know, like, I would finish faster because I have more muscle, but then I threw my water balloon, and she's so small that she went down in a push-up, and then, like, the water balloon went over her. And so then she grabbed her water balloon, and then I ran away, and I was fast enough that she couldn't hit me with it, so neither of us died that time. But then the second time, I was up against somebody that is in my rucking group, and I just went over there, and I had so much time that I, like, went over there, and I stood over him while he was doing his 8-count bodybuilder, and then I just smashed him on the back. It was pretty great. So that was a lot of fun. And
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask, bodybuilders are kind of like burpees.
Eight count bodybuilder is when you drop dead to the ground, you do a plank jack, then you do a push up, and then you get back up again. So you drop back up from there. There isn't a jump at the top, but it's basically a burpee without a jump, but you add a plank jack.
Mm.
So I did that. And then also in the event too, part of it is honoring the fallen. So everybody brought somebody who had died within, like a week of the 4th of July. And we were talking about, how they served and what they did and what war and all that stuff. So it was pretty cool. Then after that, on the actual 4th of July, I went to a Camp Gladiator event, and the workout was under two pavilions because it was fucking flooding in Houston.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, and so, there were parts of town that were totally underwater, and, cars flooded out, and the whole nine. It was, serious. And so, anyway, before all of that, before everything hit the fan and it was too bad to drive, I went to my workout and we were under pavilions and it was so hot because there were so many people crammed in there that I just jumped out in the rain because what do I care? So
right.
That was fun. Well, then
that gets a little bit to the root, back about the water balloons or whatever. Like, it reminds me of time as a kid or, teenager, tween, whatever. But everybody had super soakers or water balloons. Yeah. And the goal was to avoid being hit. Like me as a 30-year-old man who hates the heat, somebody shot a super soaker at me, I would just open up my mouth and point it, fill me up like a carnival clown.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a thing where, we had a lot of fun with it. And the whole point and purpose of the water balloons was, of course, because the temperature, the heat index, for people who do not know, has been 108 regularly every day.
Right. Because Houston and all of Texas is a monument to man's hubris.
Yeah. Humanity is still trying to figure out why anyone settled there.
Right.
So anyway, I did those. But then yesterday I went to a really fun belly dance workshop about shimmies called Butter My Buns.
Yeah, that is very funny. You sent me the picture of the pamphlet for that, and that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, with Twyla Jean, and she's really cool. She's got the attitude that comes along with, calling something Butter My Buns.
No, of course. You got to back that up. Yeah.
A lot of fun.
You're going to write that check. You got to make sure you got the funds to cash it.
Yeah, for sure. And shimmies are basically a move that's about controlled relaxation. And as you guys might guess, between all of my various forms of training, I have tight muscles. So this is a difficult thing for me to do.
Right.
It's not stress. It's just I work out so much, yeah. I have stress, but
it's antithetical. It's antithetical to your other efforts.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And then also this is totally unrelated to things that I do. However, for people who don't know, I also study completely random subjects at my whim. Right now I'm currently on a book about the neuroscience behind human behavior.
Okay.
And when reading about the slow development of the prefrontal cortex, I was musing about loot boxes because adolescents are more likely to take risks due to the incompleteness of their prefrontal cortex. Mm-hmm. And so you can see where my mind was going regarding the whole loot box thing and the gambling addiction threat and the whole thing about you're targeting kids and stuff like that. I mean, kids are more predisposed to falling into that bad habit and being too compulsive to control it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, that was just related to a news article that we talked about at some time, and I figured I would bring it up because it's interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it sounds like you've had a very good 4th of July.
Yeah, I did things, physical and mental.
I did things too.
Hey, tell us about them.
What things did you do?
Sorry. I didn't mean to go in front of you, David, but I will go. Because it is a more seamless segue. No, I just I went home and I did a bunch of family stuff. My stepsister lives on I'm going to call it a farm, except it is not like a big plot of land where you grow food to sell to people. It's more like a plot of land in the country where they live, and also they have a garden, 6 chickens and 2 hogs. And also a pond. So the 4th of July, we went out there primarily to swim, but I got to spray off the hogs, which was fun, because they made fun sounds and they really enjoyed it. I scared the chickens, unfortunately, because I didn't realize there was a rooster until I heard him cock-a-doodle-doo. And
it seems like terrifying.
Yeah, he was real protective. he was very protective, but you know, it's always fun to watch. And the way chickens move is just fascinating. It's hilarious and fun.
I have a friend who has chickens, and she like takes videos of them on like swings and stuff like that, which is like, if to see a chicken on a swing is like really funny to me for some reason.
They're just the most ridiculous animals.
Yeah, they're adorable, and they're actually really cuddly and lovey and everything. Like she also posts videos of them like cuddling, you know, and everything, but like it's just funny.
Yeah. So. No, so it was fun. Like, you know, I guess I'm a city boy. I would rail against that definition. I don't know that I'm a city boy. But it is fun being a non-country boy interacting with animals. It's fun. But moreover, we just kind of swam in a pond. Swimming in ponds is fun, because you can't really touch the bottom because that's slimy. If the pond that you are swimming in has a diving deck, that is also fun because you get to throw a child off of it and he really enjoys it because he wears a life vest. But no, just, you know, got a little bit of sun and got to eat some cookout food and sleep on a pool floaty in the middle of a pond while it rained. It was a good time. And then also got to go to my dad's house. My grandma on my dad's side just celebrated her 80th birthday, and we had a little cookout to celebrate that, and got to see some family members that I don't get to spend a lot of time with. No, it was a good, wholesome, fun family outdoor animal time. Yeah, so that's what I was doing last week when we did not have an episode. Seems worth it.
Yeah,
it's worth it for the animals.
Yes, for the animals.
Also family.
Yes, also family. Also family. How about you, David? Sorry, I didn't mean to set you up for. I know you said off air that your fourth was boring, but you up to anything cool?
So, well, I guess my fourth itself was boring, but actually the weekend before, my mother came and visited. So
oh, fun! I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of just, you know, showing her around the city, going and eating, you know, lots of different, you know, cool restaurants and you know, stuff like that.
What's the first place that you've taken out of town or that you care about in San Francisco to say, hey, this is good, fun stuff?
Sure. So generally speaking, I live in right in the middle of Chinatown, and there's a place. I'm not sure of the name because I walk everywhere. So it's like I know how to get places as opposed to knowing what they're called.
Right.
But basically, it's the oldest dim sum restaurant in America.
Mm.
Cool.
And yeah, it's a fairly nice one. You know, it's kind of, I guess for people who aren't familiar, like dim sum is kind of, you know, Chinese, like breakfast, just like lots of small portions.
It's like dumplings and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And it very much tends to be like one of two, categories, either like, you know, fairly nice, fancy, you know, that sort of thing, or like super, super cheap, like not necessarily like dirty or bad, but just, you know, kind of.
Yeah, but that's the one you want.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And this one does a really good job of kind of being right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's generally my go-to, although there's a place we didn't get to go, but I really want to go. That's nearby is the bar where Sam Spade eats in the Maltese Falcon.
Ah, geez, man.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's real cool.
Yeah. So that's definitely on my list. But actually, probably the coolest thing that happened is my Tai Chi club tournament group place, People's, had, you know, we've done a couple of tournaments that have done well, and so we've been planning on doing a dinner mm-hmm. to celebrate, and so decide to do it during, you know, when my mom could be there.
Oh yeah.
So cool. It was like a 7-course meal or something that just tons and tons of just like much more like authentic Chinese food than you normally get.
Right. Identifiable parts is
right, exactly.
Is what differentiates authentic from inauthentic ethnic food right. for me.
Yeah, no, and that was definitely a big part of it. Pro tip, I do not like southern pig's feet, like southern US style pig's feet, but mm-hmm. Chinese style pig's feet are actually really, really good.
Okay.
It's basically very similar idea to like ribs, in right. that like you're not, you know, eating the hoof or anything. It's just kind of like a specific part of the animal that has like an easily accessible chunk of meat on it.
Real quick question for you, David. Will you be offended if I just take your word on that?
Sure.
Okay.
Go for that.
Okay.
But, yeah,
I believe you. I'm happy you enjoyed it, but that sounds fucking disgusting.
it's I know it's interesting.
I'm sure. I know you're.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, and it was cool, and like actually one of the funniest parts of it was did just kind of as like a party game, you know, put like everyone's name in a hat and, you know, drew people out one by one, and, you know, each person when they go up they have to answer a riddle.
Okay.
But they had some that were like the designated American ones.
All right.
But then like most of them were in Chinese, and the woman who organized it, her son, I think he's like about in high school, but you know, speaks English. Mm-hmm. And was translating, but was really funny because about half of them were just like things you can't translate, you know, just like, you know, they relied on like puns based on Chinese sayings and
yeah.
stuff. Although one I think I'm gonna steal because I think it's actually kind of catchy is apparently there's a Chinese saying that basically says like the narrowest street is when you're walking past someone you hate.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, I feel like that's actually pretty good. but yeah, so that was pretty entertaining. So yeah, real good time.
Well, that was nice of them to come up with something else to make the for lack of a better word, the white people feel included.
Yeah, yeah. It's it's funny. I don't know if I said you know, we went and did the tournament, and I ended up having to do a lot of the translating when we're trying to get into the hotel room.
Okay.
Because I was the only one that spoke English, and basically, you know, the person who, well, one like, you know, Chinese names, you can't really tell like how they're spelled from how they sound,
right?
Because of, you know, vagaries of the language. And also the person who took the you know, the names down probably didn't speak Chinese, so it was all just like the names were all registered to just like however the heck they tried to spell the person's name.
Right, so you were trying to like backmask it from phonetics. Yeah,
exactly. And to be even worse, like, you know, a lot of the people, you know, they only say knew their name and characters, so they couldn't even like write down necessarily and easily communicate to the person like,
right,
here's how my name sounds vaguely.
So they had to relate it to you, and then you had to kind of like anglicize it a little bit.
Yep, pretty much.
So you've been in the area for a little bit, and you've definitely kind of been in the circle, you know, speaking primarily with Chinese people. Do you feel like you're getting a little bit of a little bit of a footing in the language?
You know, some of it, I studied just a very little bit, like literally 1/4 in college,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, obviously isn't enough to be useful, but was enough to kind of get over the, like, the sort of where the language sounds like gibberish, if that makes sense.
Yeah, to get over the intimidation of just how different it is to
and it's the thing where like like when I hear the language, I can actually pick out the words, whereas a lot of people, particularly from like romance languages, really have trouble even like, you know, making out what's being said.
Yeah, I'd be totally at sea.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, so I'm starting to pick up and, you know, starting to pick up a lot of the, you know, mostly the kind of like really common kind of subwords or things like that. Just like howla is all right, or like me basically means like, you know, how is good. La more or less indicates like the end of something.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's a really, really common word. And so that's something you can kind of, you know, pick out, you know, things like the word la repeated, you know, la, 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 mm-hmm. more or less is that's kind of the actually the way my Chinese instructor explained it is that's the way a Chinese mother rounds up her children. You know, it's kind of come here, but it's kind of the, you know,
adding severity with every repetition.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
Yeah. You mentioned proverbs, and I forget if this came up on the air on another show, because every time I speak, it is my memory being sucked into a microphone.
Sure.
But I want to make sure this is captured if it wasn't captured elsewhere. Gary was telling me about this proverb that he heard. He thought it was Croatian, but I did a Google search for it, and it's Jamaican.
Okay.
I just want to repeat this here. I'm just going to say it. Behind the dog, it is dog, and dog is in quotes. So when you're behind the dog, you call it dog. When you're in front of the dog, it's Mr. Dog. So when the dog can show you its teeth, or when the dog is cornered, right? Yeah, then it deserves respect. It is no longer dog. It is Mr. Dog.
That's really good.
Yeah. That is apropos of nothing, aside from the fact that you mentioned a proverb, but I've taken infinite delight in the week since I heard that. I wanted to make sure it was immortalized somewhere.
Yep. No, I actually really like that. That's, I know, like, it's always interesting because a lot of times, like, it's really interesting whether or not, like, a proverb will translate. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, it's always fun, even if it doesn't translate, to hear a little bit of the justification for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Did your mom have a good time?
Yeah, had a really good time.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that is a long generalities, but it's been a while and it's fun to catch up with you guys. Why don't we get started? Any opposition to getting into the episode?
Sure. Can I just real quick grab a drink?
Yes.
Sweet.
Hey Jala, while he's doing that, we normally take breaks in the middle of segments, but we are still here.
Yep.
Yeah. Any other chicken stories from your friend?
No, not any other chicken stories that I can think of offhand. They're adorable. So, you know, another thing, I had chickens when I was really little too.
Oh yeah.
But I don't remember them very well because I was so small. Mm. But at the time, my sister, it's just me and my sister. My sister's 4 years older than me. And she, at the time, was in a phase where she called everything flower and rose.
Okay.
And so the chickens were flower and rose. And then when she got new pets, they were flower and rose. Everything is flower and rose all the time. And it was funny because at one point she got a cockatiel and my parents said, okay, you can't name this cockatiel flower or rose.
Okay.
So she called it Star.
Okay. So yeah, this
I
is
have no idea.
This is my cockatiel. No, her old name is Star.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea how old she was at the time, but I was like a little kid and we had some chickens. So
yeah. No, my grandma grew up on a farm, and she was always terrified of the chickens because, you know, it's the 30s, so they would make the kids go out and either get the, you know, just do chores around the chickens, and, you know, when a chicken comes up against a small human, they think they're big shit, so they're gonna start menacing you. Yeah.
They are Mr. Chicken.
Yes, they are. So we got the regular kind of show in front of us, the brief, the multiplayer and the grind, and why don't we get started with... Are you good to start, David?
Yeah, sorry, just real quick, it's probably not going to make sense to the listeners, but one other proverb or riddle that I feel like you and me could bond over, one of the like the name for panda in Chinese, or like one of the variant names or something like that, is literally bear cat.
Oh,
and
nice.
So one of the riddles was like, what color is it? Is a bear cat. It was basically, it's like, well, I'm going to say red and black, but I feel like that's not what you're looking for.
Yeah, no, that was a superpower they were not prepared for you to have, to know what a bear cat is.
Anyway, sorry, that just seemed appropriate.
Yeah, why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Why don't we start out with some fan candy? Hey, David, what's going on with Warframe?
Yeah, so Warframe just had its big con, appropriately called TennoCon, after those are the kind of name of your race within the Warframe universe.
Okay.
And one of their big announcements was that Warframe's going to be on Switch, which is immediately leading to questions of will there be crossplay with PS4?
Absolutely not. They have made it clear because they are horseshit. Continue.
Yes. then they also released several trailers and then gameplay footage of two new major expansions they're going to be adding.
Okay.
One of which is going to take place on Venus and is introducing a faction called Fortuna that is apparently made up of cyborg, debtor colony prisoner peoples. Presumably for one of the races is kind of the Warframe equivalent of like the Ferengi, just kind of, hyper-capitalists.
Right.
And so presumably related to that. And so that's going to be their second kind of main open world area location experience thing.
Okay.
The other thing that is, in some ways kind of a bigger thing is they've announced that their second expansion is going to be called Railjack, I believe. And it will feature space combat. Not only that, but it'll be in the form of basically co-op, where like each member of your team mans a different battle station on your ship, and gunners and engineering and piloting, stuff like that.
Lovers in a dangerous Warframe.
Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully it will be better than they already have a game mode where you basically fly around space and fight in like kind of wingsuit exoskeleton things. And unfortunately, it's just incredibly flawed. Okay. So hopefully it ends better than that. But it'd be kind of cool if maybe even they were able to work in and kind of redeem some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Just seems pretty cool, and I really enjoy the fact that this very much just seems like this is the game that's just like, we're going to add whatever we think will be kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. Nobody could have guessed this 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I'm really excited to see what's going on. I still need to figure out if I'm going to bite the bullet and start a new character on PS4 so I can join some more of our duck feed peoples.
Oh, yeah.
It would require a large amount of your time, perhaps 6 months of your life.
Yeah, I mean, technically, there's like at least one very useful item I have that you can only get after you've logged in on at least 200 separate days. So that would obviously take a while.
Yeah.
So
huh,
we'll see.
Yeah, No, I feel bad for the people who are going to pick up on Switch and, you know, inadvertently not be able to play with the people that they wanted to play with.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, like, I'm a little surprised, or I guess I just don't understand it, why the companies can't just go around Sony.
I don't know. I think that really Sony is the gatekeeper to their own player base, and the only explicit explanation that I have heard is by people who no longer work there, but saying like, mm-hmm. yeah, they just want money. Like it is purely they don't want their services to be used to enhance the experience of any other platform. So yeah, we're not going to do this when literally everybody else is almost unilaterally disarming in terms of that.
Which I think, I not to rehash it, but like, I think in the long run, like there's now approximately no chance that I get a PlayStation 5 or whatever. Like,
unless they change their outlook, it's a real bummer that they have seen the trend and said like, nah, no, we're just going to be our own little garden, when that is kind of proven not to be not just a friendly strategy, but a successful one, you know?
Yeah.
I guess one good thing to come out of it is with Sony being the, you know, angry old man yelling at people to get off their lawn, it seems like Nintendo no longer feels the need to do that. So that's kind of nice.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Nintendo, I mean, dating back to at least when Nintendo put out Rocket League on Switch, or when they allowed that, like you can play Rocket League with PC people on Switch. Like it's a thing. And
so I do like that at the very least they've kind of had a change of heart to how they've kind of tended to do things in the past. So that's cool.
Yeah. So that's good news for Warframe people. Jala, you have some positive news, so I'm going to throw to you.
Yeah, I have something nice to say.
For once.
Okay. So, well, okay.
I'm just being funny. I know. I'm just.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, yeah, about 400 gamers showed up at Camden Park in Fallout gear to celebrate Appalachia being featured in Fallout 76.
Oh, cool.
So locations in the E3 trailer showed areas modeled after the state capitol, West Virginia University's Woodburn Hall, the New River Gorge Bridge in Camden Park. And originally the guy that was planning this little meetup figured it would be like 15 people, like the people that he knew, you know, but then he made like an event for it. And then 1500 people were interested in it. And they ended up having door prizes, giveaways, a group photo, a costume contest and everything. And then everybody went inside the amusement park to have their fun at the day, you know, like at the park while they were there for the rest of the day. And, you know, basically the article was talking about how they wanted Bethesda to take note, because they say that this is an awesome community that everybody overlooks. Like, I don't know about you, but I didn't know shit about Appalachia.
You know, like Appalachia. I live adjacent, like, so I've got some. Yeah.
You guys would, but like I live very far away from it.
Right.
And I know like one person who has ever been to Virginia. So like, you know, whatever.
I just hope they do it well. Like,
There's a way to do it wrong, but like everything that I saw in those trailers for Fallout 76 looked really good.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so also West Virginia's tourism campaign is Almost Heaven, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And it's basically seeking to combat negative stereotypes about the region in general. Yeah. So
see, yeah. I'm hoping they go like 1A the other way and just like cash in on the Fallout thing.
Yeah, just lean full into the dystopia.
Well,
which would be very hard to do, because like West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky are fucking gorgeous.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, well, it's weird because like people forget, in particular with Kentucky, about like the other stereotype of Kentucky, which is like, that's the center of basically like horse. I don't know what you do. Ranching.
Yeah.
You
like know, husband,
that's where
husbandry,
like
yeah.
all of the thoroughbred horses and stuff like that mm-hmm. are, from. So, like, a ton of it is just super picturesque, like, horse farms.
Mm-hmm. No, it's it is a wonderful area. Go ahead, Jala.
I lost what I was going to say he was talking, so I don't know anymore. It's fine.
Yeah. Those people seem like they had a really fun time, like just Appalachian Fallout fans or Appalachian people who play games, really, you know, not really something that a lot of people talk about. No, this is great.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool because, you know, it's true. I haven't seen the Appalachian area ever in a game. So, yeah, like that's cool.
Yeah.
So.
No, and I was watching that reveal trailer. I forget which press conference it was, but when I heard the chords for the you know, for the John Denver song, I was kind of like, "Oh, fuck yes." Like, yeah, that's going to be it. Oh, finally.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, and it's really pretty. Yeah. Like, I know it's a video game and it's a video game version of it, but, you know, it's pretty. Like, it's funny to say because, like, I don't have very much awareness about that particular area of the country, but, like, to watch the Fallout 76 trailer, I'm like, I'd go there. No wonder the Appalachian Trail is a thing. That looks like a nice area.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Although, yeah.
I'll be interested to see because, like, that's probably pound for pound, other than maybe Alaska, the most, like, self-sufficient, like, you know, this is a part of the country that, like, not having electricity is fairly common in a lot of areas. You know, not all of West Virginia, obviously, but, like, actual Appalachia. So I'll be interested to see if that plays into the fact that, like, a lot of these areas probably wouldn't be that badly affected if there was an apocalypse. They're kind of innately ready for it.
Based on what I saw in the trailers, yeah. No, like, it's going to be a more vibrant, more habitable area because of that.
Ooh, I kind of hope they bring in the Amish. That I would love to see, like, how the Amish, like, adapt to that. That would be awesome.
I don't know how they would have gotten that far south is the thing.
Well, true, but yeah. I mean, still.
Well, this is cool.
Well, it's Fallout 76, just like, we've talked before, or I have talked before, rather, about how, like, with Fallout, it's like, the mechanics might be my thing, and, like, you know, even post-apocalyptic stuff, that's kind of, like, one of the things I like, but for some reason, it just, the timing when they hit me was just not a time that I could deal with that,
right.
You know, as, like, a setting to be in, and so, like, you know, seeing the same thing, but, like, in a brighter, prettier, nicer looking area. It's kind of like that appeals more to me particularly. Like, yeah. I definitely want to play this game. Whereas, you know, like, I might have been just, you know, like, oh yeah, people tell me that's a very good game and I should probably play it. I watched other people play it, but, like, I just didn't want to be in that world, you know? So yeah. I don't know, like, what makes it different? It's shinier and it's got more colors and now I like it. I don't know. So,
Yeah, and also having other people there to interact with.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Yeah,
I'm not alone.
Yeah, I'm just hoping they manage to, you know, not make the
multiplayer suck. Yeah.
Well, not. They need to remember that it's supposed to be a simulated apocalypse, not an actual apocalypse.
Yeah, it's funnier when the monsters are fictional, not somebody I know who lives over in Boise. So I've got a story, and this is very slight, and also inconsequential, and it involves the saddest breakfast I've ever seen.
Okay.
So Sega, for some reason, got it in their heads, thinking about their brand, thinking about their characters, thinking about Sonic fans. There are many of them, you know, people who are still keeping the flame alive, saying, you know what, for all these fans who have stuck around, for people who enjoy the iconography of Sonic the Hedgehog, what can we do for them? Can we give them the opportunity to take their favorite breakfast food, toast, and emblazon their favorite character into said toast? And so they created a kind of a crowdfunding campaign for the Sonic Toaster.
Yeah, That seems like good fun.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that
I'm not going to pay $35 for a toaster that only toasts one side of the bread properly and then burns in, like a hedgehog head into the other side.
Thank you, Jala. Thank you for thank you for coming out in the favor of sanity. I've been trying to save a little bit of money, and you know, a piece of toast with some spread on it, some fruit spread is a good way. You know, it is a nice, sensible, and cost effective breakfast. A big fan of toast recently, and the thing is, evenly cooked toast is what you want. Somehow they managed to rook 1,129 people into paying $35 for a toaster that will thoroughly toast one side of your bread and then not toast one side of the bread at all, except for one burned patch that looks like Sonic's head. They needed to get 1,000 people to buy this before they could manufacture them, right? But they did, and now a bunch of soon to be disappointed people are going to get their Sonic toaster sometime in October. when I talk about the saddest plate of breakfast, what I see is, okay, picture this. You got the toaster in the background. It's there displaying it. You see a plate. On that plate, two pieces of toast with Sonic emblazoned on the side of it. No spread, no butter, no anything. Just dry white toast with Sonic in it. We need to balance this out. What do we need? What do we need? How about a Clementine, a cutie, a Halo, whatever that is. Just put there, not peeled or anything, just on the plate next to the dry toast. And to cap all of this off, well, you can't just have toast in a Clementine. What do you need? Well, you need some coffee, just a sad, clear cup of black coffee that is, I assure
only
you,
only partially filled anyway.
Yes, I assure you, that is as cold as a crypt.
Yes.
and that is the image that they decided to use to promote this fucking travesty that makes other travesties. I don't care how much you like Sonic. You can like Sonic all you want. I was fond of Sonic at a time. I have fond memories of liking those games. But toast is eternal, and good toast should be valued above all else.
Yeah, this is just pretty, this is ridiculous.
$35.
$35 for the head crap.
I feel like what I really need is a toaster that will like rasterize images into like, so that my entire toast can just be some mural to whatever image.
Oh yeah, you need a bread printer.
Yeah.
So that's the story. I think a lot of people got their priorities mixed up. Evenly cooked toast, Uber Alice. Come on.
That is seriously a pet peeve. Like, if I had some toast and it's like, it's nice and crisp on one side and then like some fucking soft ass weak shit on the other side and then burned in the middle, I'd be so mad.
No, this is a real bugbear of mine. I've got a toaster oven. It's a real shitty toaster oven that I got like 7 years ago when I got an apartment. Like, I need to get, like, I'm in the market for just a good toaster that will evenly toast this, as opposed to the nightmare that I'm living with right now, which is burnt toast at the top and then basically raw bread at the bottom.
Have you considered trying a cast iron skillet?
I have done that. I've tried that, but I am no good at doing that. And also, I don't enjoy the idea of either setting bread on fire or putting in enough cooking cooking oil or butter or things like that. Like, just no. I just want a piece of dry ass medium for me to spread the good stuff onto.
See, I've actually gone into baking has been one of the random things I've started doing some of why I'm here.
Oh, awesome. Nice. I wish I could bake, except I already live in the pit of hell, so turning on the oven is like the last thing anybody wants.
Oh, yeah, and humidity fucks that up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the segment's over. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked, have you ever been misled by marketing into playing a game that wasn't what you expected? And you can talk about hype trailers, commercials, you know, tricking you into an experience that you didn't want. Thanks to Michael P. for the question.
Yeah, I'll get
started.
Yeah. No, this is we got a lot of responses. I think we are headed to the salt mines. Noah says, "Well, I feel positive about the game overall, especially with how it's been polished since released. Final Fantasy XV's media hype, including the movie and YouTube anime series, suggested the scope of the game would be much bigger."
Yeah. I don't know. I'm skeptical whenever I hear a Final Fantasy's hype.
Yes.
Just in general.
Is that?
But that's not to like get mad, you know, like make all the Final Fantasy people mad. I like a Final Fantasy sometimes.
They're always reviewed so highly so soon after they come out. I think your skepticism is warranted.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say is like, you know, it's just kind of like, it's kind of skewed because there's the Uber fans, and I think they're the ones that get to it first and review it first. And it's like, no, I want to wait a while before I decide what I think about this thing.
Yes.
So
my only exposure, aside from the short time that I spent with Final Fantasy 15 before I kind of put it down, maybe to come back to it in about 3 years, is when I play mobile games or games on my iPad. You know, there's a new class of advertisements that are interactive.
You can play. You can play part of like that city builder defense, whatever the hell.
Yeah,
game.
Or the one where you play as one of the bros running down a hallway fighting slimes or whatever. Yeah, it doesn't do an awful lot to like raise my affection for Final Fantasy 15 as a brand when it just intersects itself or interjects itself into another experience that I actually want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Final Fantasy XV, is that the road trip one?
Yes.
Yeah.
They really need to figure out like a different way to like, I don't know, differentiate, because I never know what any of their games are now.
Yeah. Well, it's like 13 where they expect it. Like, I mean, in order to get like a return on investment on the assets that they made, they have to do a bunch of games in the same world.
True.
Yeah. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, "When I bought an N64 a year after it came out, one of the games I was convinced to buy with it based on my love for the franchise and the hype was Zelda Ocarina of Time. I did not like the game one bit and still don't." Come at me, bro. No, it doesn't actually say that. It didn't translate well at all to 3D. Had glitches, crappy puzzles, no classic music, and Navi.
Yeah.
I was spending my own hard-earned money by now, so $60 hurt. I realize this isn't a popular opinion, but this game is stupidly overhyped. And yes, I did try the remastered version.
I was tickled pink with this answer because I didn't have my own N64 until like it was retro. However, at the time that N64 was popular, I worked at a video rental place and I rented an N64 and a couple of games because I got the game rentals for free. So like, you know, I just rented the system and I picked up Ocarina of Time and then like Pokemon Stadium. And I expected that I was going to be playing the shit out of the Zelda game. And I was just like, it just did not hit me well at all. And of course, at this point, like I was in college, like the beginning of college. So like I wasn't the target audience for that anyway. But I ended up playing the shit out of Pokemon Stadium. However, I played the shit out of that game. But yeah, Greg also wanted me to say too that he thinks that the only franchise that he particularly likes that did well from 2D to 3D was Fallout, and he disliked all of the 3D Zeldas that he's played.
Oh well. I can't roll in smugly and say, "But Majora's Mask, my friend." No, that's not right.
See, I feel like if you don't like the other Zelda games, there's no 3D Zelda games, there's no chance you're going to like Majora's Mask.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
He did say that like it, whenever he gets a Switch, he thinks he will like Breath of the Wild, but I don't know. Like for me, you know,
because it is a Fallout game.
Well, except everybody's like fucking happy except that one little corner over there with all the dark, scary shit going on.
Yeah.
But like, But anyway, like, I'm kind of in his boat because, like, when it comes to Zelda, my strongest affection is for the very, very first game, which is not normal. Most people, like, you know,
Link to the Past. Yeah.
Yeah, Link to the Past is the one that they really, really like. But, like, my favorite is the very, very first one. And that's because that was, you know, a game that I played the shit out of when I was little, and I could never beat it because that game is opaque in a lot of ways. But, like, I just loved it. I just loved the hell out of the world and just, you know, the gameplay and everything. And, you know, at the time, they also had the cartoons going on, like the Zelda on the Super Mario show.
Oh, yeah,
and
Fridays.
That, and totally, like, that was when I was a little kid, so it hit me at the right time, you know? And all the other ones just seemed like they were too kiddy for me by the time I got to them. So, yeah, and then, of course, like, with Breath of the Wild, we already know I got bored, so... You know.
I really wish I could find some place that, like, streamed the old, like, Zelda and Super Mario and stuff cartoons. Just
oh, they're all
because...
on YouTube.
Okay, yeah, I guess. I kind of want to go back and see if they're as batshit insane as, like, my memories lead them to be.
They're terrible. They're absolutely
they're
terrible.
Not very good. We did the Mario Super Show for adaptation of Gay, and it's not very good.
Did you?
Yeah.
When was this? I remember Captain N.
A couple months ago.
Aww.
The adaptation, decay, abject suffering crossover.
Adaptation decay a lot of times is very similar to abject suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of video game movies are very good.
Yeah.
Have there been any that you would just straight up say are good?
I'm a defender of Silent Hill, even though not all of it is very great.
Yeah. I agree with that. All of that right there.
Yeah. Jello,
oh, sorry. I was just going to say, the only ones I could think of is if you count the Resident Evil movies. But
That was the first episode, and we hate those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not very good. It didn't work for us, is what I should say. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, they also have almost nothing to do with the games, so.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Jala, what does Nick say?
Nick says, I remember that Brutal Legend was marketed and shown off as a third-person action game, but it turns out it's only a small part, and the majority of the combat gameplay is third-person RTS-like Sacrifice. At the time of release, I couldn't wrap my head around it and quickly lost interest, and I'm pretty sure my 360 copy ended up getting traded in or donated years ago. But it is going to be one of the free games Twitch is giving away this month, July 14th through 27th. So I am tempted to try it again and see if it clicks with me more now that I know what to expect.
It's possibly true. Brutal Legend also wasn't helped by the fact that they released a demo that was mostly the third-person character action Devil May Cry combat that did not hint at the strategy stuff at all, really. So they led a lot of people into thinking, hey, I have experience what this is about, and it seems fine and good, and then catfished them into playing Sacrifice. And Sacrifice is not a good game.
Yeah. Although I know that was one of the games Gameflied in college when Dennis and I were roommates. And we enjoyed it, although, like... I think a lot of that was more on the strength of, like, not the story, but you know what I mean, the world and the, you know, just it being charming as opposed to necessarily gameplay.
Yeah,
but
we call that the double fine problem.
I would definitely, like, categorize it in the, like, games I have a positive opinion of.
Yeah, like it's the double fine valley where it can charm the pants off of you even if it's not satisfying to play.
Yeah, and well, depending upon what you're expecting when you're going into it, that can totally burn it out, even if it might be like a decent enough game. Like, if you aren't expecting what you end up getting, it may just hit you all wrong.
Yeah, if you went into Psychonauts expecting Day of the Tentacle, you might be disappointed to find a platformer. If you went into Brutal Legend expecting Psychonauts, you might be disappointed to find Sacrifice. Yeah. Devin says, the Thief reboot. Referring to Thief 4F. They tried to market it as a stealth game, even more detailed than the previous one, with amazing dynamic gameplay. It wasn't. they forgot proper stealth mechanics.
Yeah, like, I bounced off of that. I talked about that a long time ago, but I played some of it, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
And this, then that's about as far as I got.
This is why we need the ability to make mods for, is it Fox Engine that Phantom Pain's made with?
Think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I would love to see some, you know, fans get together and make like a Thief game with that.
Oh yeah.
That would be neat.
Yep. No, I've not heard a single positive thing about the Thief reboot, which makes me immediately want to play it as soon as possible. I totally won't. But I just like no, if everybody's running away from a place, I want to run into it. So I trust you, Devin. I understand that there is probably no candy to be found there, but I want to search for candy anyway. David, what does John say?
John says this doesn't quite count, but after
Final Fantasy VIII
turned me on to JRPGs. I saw the magazine ad for Lunar 2 Eternal Blue Complete.
Jala, hold yourself back.
Don't worry, I nailed down all the tables before she got here.
Okay, cool. All
right. I think it would be a similar experience to FFVIII,
i.e.
Cinematic 3D. I got my parents to buy it for me, only to be very confused and off-put when it turned out to be a classically styled 2D game. That is really my fault in misunderstanding rather than being misled, but there you go.
Oh yeah, we actually had a conversation about this because literally, like, as soon as he dropped this message, I was like all up on it, and I was like ready to be upset. But then actually, I wasn't upset because he didn't say anything bad about it. He just, you know, so we had a conversation about that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a lot of those games, and not a lot of them, but specifically the Working Designs re-releases that came out were marketed as new things when in reality they were, you know,
old as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that it's a remake of a game that came out in like 95. So, you know, like, it's an old ass game. And not only that, but even when it came out, the really revolutionary thing it was doing was adding all of the cinematics in there, all the anime sequences. The gameplay itself, like, I'll be the first to tell you, the gameplay is not revolutionary. It's not anything but a standard 2D old JRPG. And it's not like a ridiculously hard one or anything either. Yeah. So it's just like, you're not there for the gameplay. You're there for the music and for the story, you know? And so, yeah, I was like, yeah, if you were to play Final Fantasy VIII and be super enthralled with that and then try to go back and play Lunar right after that, thinking that it was going to be similar. Yeah. You'd be upset.
Yeah. And when we talk about being super into FF8, like, we should know that John's Facebook avatar, if that is his real name, is Squall from Final Fantasy VIII. Like, John is super into FF8. It made a mark on him. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Jala, I need you to read Ollie's answer because I love this.
Okay, Rogue Warrior. I got sucked in by the trailer and the Bethesda connection. Turns out it was as hollow as any game I've ever played and had bad controls. Stay away.
Yay.
Well, and like the whole thing with like the guy who it's quote unquote like based on or whatever is, yeah, it's kind of
is there a little bit of stolen valor in there? Am I mistaken in that?
See, I've heard mixed things. Like, the dude was definitely a Navy SEAL. Like, right. so definitely at some point, like, you know, did something.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the stuff I've heard is you know, kind of how I heard something put it is like he goes on and on about how like you know, what a, you know, a loose cannon and maverick he is and stuff like that. And that only seems like a good thing if you have no idea how the military works.
Right. Yeah. It's a video game based off of his own fan fiction about his own career. And the video game itself, very outdated. I think it was developed for the original Xbox. In development hell, updated. The character is voiced by Mickey Rourke. The notable thing is for the credits, Mickey Rourke does a rap as that character, talking about how cool it is to be a loose cannon war criminal.
To be fair, I do not know that much about his background. So, yeah. Like, you know, obviously he contests all the things and stuff. But
yeah, it's controversial at the very least, but also a very bad game. All I know, like my sole touch point, but my biggest touch point for Rogue Warrior, in high school, choir teacher loved her. Just choir was my favorite class. Just got a lot out of taking classes with her. On the whiteboard or on the, you know, on one of the boards, she had a quote from Rogue Warrior, which was, "The more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in combat."
That's a real old quote.
Yeah, but it was attributed to Rogue Warrior. You know, like attributed to that book, at least on that board. And I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That probably has a lot to it. And then learning more about that guy and about his work and about that book itself, I was kind of like, oh man, talk about like something that is like innocuous on its face and it's fine, but like kind of bullshit at its root. Yeah.
So I was disappointed. I thought Rogue Warrior was the name of what's the one? I guess it's based on like some British comic book where you're some like ghost soldier guy, and you have to like go around possessing peoples.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe look it up. I will take us over to Warren, who says, "A game that always felt like a bait and switch to me was Assassin's Creed 3. All the promotional material showed Connor as an adult, and you don't actually get to play as him until halfway through the game. The first quarter of the game is his father, Haytham. Then the second quarter is Connor as a child. It was fun once we had his full ability set, but the lead up to it took way too long." Yeah, I hopped off the series at Assassin's Creed 3, so I feel resonance with this.
Yeah, get around to actually having him as like an adult Assassin's Creed-ing things?
Back half of that game.
Okay.
Yeah. No, and like that, like that's a bummer. But like the big thing that Assassin's Creed 3 added was the ship-to-ship combat, and that was expounded upon in Black Flag. Yeah.
You know, I just realized the other day that I was given Black Flag for free. It's on my computer. I forgot I had it. It's there. It's another backlog item, but it's not in Steam. It's in the stupid Uplay terrible.
Yeah, I've got that too. Yeah, I came with a graphics card when I bought this computer 4 years ago.
Yeah, that probably is where I got mine also. Yeah.
So what is the actual Assassin's Creed? Like, do they ever spell that out?
It's like, like nothing is true, everything is allowed, take risks.
Okay, yeah, fly that's your dreams. What I thought, like, isn't that just end up being, like, the Psychopath Manifesto?
Yeah. David, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, "Well, it wasn't me directly, I got final..." You've got to purposely be giving me these.
No, I'm going in the rotation. It's Final Fantasy VII.
It's Final Fantasy VII.
Damn it.
Rocky V plus Rocky II.
Yeah, I slept through that class in elementary school where we learned Roman numerals. Well, it wasn't me directly. I got Final Fantasy VII 2 days after release at a local game store used in college because someone thought it was a sports game. Worked out great for me.
I was seriously like, dude, how the fuck does someone think this is a sports game? Did they not look at the back? And then I'm like, you know, maybe they thought Chocobo Racing was a sports game? I don't even know how this works.
Maybe?
The only thing I could think would be like fantasy sports.
Yeah, I guess. But they really did not look at anything if they were just picking it up. You know, like they weren't looking at it at all. Or they were fucking high, one or the other.
equally likely. You know, this sounds like an urban legend or something somebody would say to be shitty about other people. But working in a game store, I definitely fielded returns for people who bought JRPGs and returned them specifically. And this is the stated reason. I didn't think there would be reading in this. Not that they're illiterate, but they didn't expect it to be something that, you know, they would have to follow a story written in text.
And to be fair, like, that's...
That's reasonable.
Depending on the JRPG, that can be kind of a very legitimate criticism.
Yeah. No, that's but the way that it was phrased, I didn't expect there to be reading. Like you had to look into it a little bit more to not be like a total classist piece of shit about it. I wasn't saying that that's what you were doing, but like that was my first instinct was like, so reading's a problem. No, you just didn't want a boring ass thing where you read about, you know, environmental stuff. I get it.
I always wondered, like, I don't know, it's one of those things I can't remember from childhood. Like, how did I play games before I could read? Because there's very few games now that don't have at least a fair amount of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but back in the day, at least, like, when I was young, it was like NES. There wasn't a whole hell of a lot of reading in NES games.
Yeah, you could divine.
I mean, not... Yeah, there were a lot of just like Mario types where there wasn't much of anything in there.
Yeah, so. Fair enough.
Yep. Let's hear Jala. What does Robert say?
Robert says, I have never been more excited and subsequently disappointed than with No Man's Sky. I wanted to be a space rogue smuggling goods and shooting aliens who were after my shit. But instead, I was alone in a universe with nothing in it. I do enjoy the gameplay loop that they presented us at launch, but the lack of diversity in the galaxy is what brought my interest down. I was promised a game where you could do anything, but instead I was given a game where you can do one thing and pretend you're doing 100.
And then I hope part two of that story is, and then I bought Subnautica and had a very good, structured experience.
I was thinking more like, and that's why I learned about existentialism and learned that we are all alone in the universe.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No Man's Sky. I remember when that was a huge thing. All those years ago.
I remember the brouhaha all you guys had about it. And here's me over here like, I didn't play that shit.
Yeah, fuck that. Jack writes, I'm not sure how. Yes, I am. I was 17. But I was bamboozled into believing that Shadow Man would be a playable experience. I bought the aesthetic completely, and that overruled my willingness to wait on anything resembling a review. Whoops. Shadow Man is interesting. So I think that was, I think an Acclaim platformer that was released for PlayStation and N64. I need to make sure that that's the case based on a comic book. The thing that I think that Shadow Man will most be remembered for is the fact that whoever published it or developed it was shameless about advertising. So I think the same people did Turok, and they offered like $10,000 to the first person who named their kid Turok, you know, after Turok, the dinosaur hunter. They offered a similar incentive to people who decorated a loved one's grave, their burial site, with Shadow Man kind of pamphlets or whatever, because it is about a person who comes back from the dead. So fucking tasteless.
Did they at least pay out?
Maybe.
Because that's the worst is every so often you'll hear about one of these and then they'll be like, oh, we didn't think anyone would actually do it. We were joking.
Yeah, we were just looking for the write-up. We didn't think people would read that and act on it. No, it was a claim. It was a claim that did that. Sorry, Jack.
So, from the gameplay standpoint, like, it seems I have no experience with this personally. It seems like I have heard some like semi-positive things about it. Did it have like any redeeming points it's known for, or is it just straight up crap?
My impression is that it was of its era, very thoroughly. Okay. So,
sure. Yeah,
yeah, yep. Let's see, David. What does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, "I didn't buy this particular game, but I was excited for it. The Division, also Destiny, which I did buy, and was utterly bummed out by what the game." Was promised to be, but completely, in my opinion, missed the mark.
Yeah.
I don't know, like...
Those are both games you like,
I'm in the weird camp in that, like, I kind of liked The Division, although also in the camp of, like, that's not an opinion-based... Like, I don't know, the commentator in me recognizes that is a very flawed game.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
But
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, if you didn't like what Destiny did, you would not like what The Division did, because it was basically Destiny in, you know, like,
in third person. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I was
like
if, the Cold War, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, like if you left, you know, if you came into those announcements thirsty for an MMO, like, you could not be blamed for thinking they were going to give you something that was, that would satisfy that.
I will say one thing that I do think The Division in particular kind of fell down on is it had a lot of the setup and almost the trappings for doing some really cool, like survival and, mechanics and, like, you know, dealing with, you know, looters and stuff like that, and then just never did anything with them.
Yeah. Well, Jala, what does Austin say?
Austin says, as a big fan of the series, I was so hyped for Diablo 3 when it came out that I pre-ordered it the day it was available. I was promised that it would be have a variety of interesting builds and a solid story just like the earlier games did. But nope, I was given boring classes with boring abilities, and the game didn't even work for 2 weeks after launch.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, people were very upset, and I think Blizzard has spent the past 5 years constantly reworking it to be satisfying, something like that. I definitely know people
if
who
you're
really
playing it on consoles.
Maybe. You know what? All the people that I've heard who have had good experience with it both have the last name Greer, and they play it all the time, and they really enjoy it. They also play it on PS4, so I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a bummer. So let's hear. Justin says, I thought Close Combat 2, A Bridge Too Far, was a normal real-time strategy game based on the box art. Imagine my frustration when soldiers refused to follow my suicidal orders because they were scared. I returned it. Many consider it a classic. I have no idea
what
this game is.
Your soldiers just felt that was a bridge too far.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like the idea of an RTS game that has morale built into it, that not everybody is a you know, complete automaton. That's good. I've never heard of this game.
I feel like most, like, RTS, those strategies that would not be compatible with.
No, of course. No, like you're doing the Fabian strategy. You're sending so many people to die that it overwhelms the forces. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Allison say?
Allison says, I was tricked by the pre-release marketing into believing that Dark Souls 2 would be a good game.
Scorcher. Yeah. differing opinions are both acknowledged and allowed. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yes. Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, back in around 2008, I had a laptop that could only run Oblivion if I turned all the sliders down, and even then, it only topped out at 18 frames per second. So I went to Steam in search of something like Oblivion, and I saw a title called Mountain Blade. It looked exactly like what I wanted, so I picked it up. Once I downloaded it and started playing, I came to the crushing realization that Mountain Blade is less like a game and more like a cool toolkit for making a game. I know that series definitely has its fans, but it was not what I was looking for at all. Yeah, I jumped into Mountain Blade for like a minute, and I was kind of like in the same boat where I was like, oh, this kind of looks sort of, you know, like Elder Scrolls-ish kind of whatever. Okay, yeah, that looks kind of, oh, damn. I started playing. I'm like, that's not my thing.
No.
There are people who like this game a lot, and I know people like that is why I started playing it, because I knew people who were really into it, and mm-hmm. I just was like, not for me.
this quiche ain't like, done. It's not cooked. Yeah. Quiche ain't done. Yeah. Quiche jiggling.
Yeah, I feel you, Mike. For real.
Yeah.
So
we're eventually going to do it for WoW, and it'll be one of those things. You just have to go into it with expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do these final three pretty quick. Michael, sure. was the person who submitted this question. We want to get to him, saying, I first rented Guilty Gear because it had cool anime dudes on the cover. Young Mike thought and anime equaled JRPG and picked it up. I was initially disappointed, but that was my rental for the week, so I stuck with it. Eventually, I learned how fun it was, just in time to turn it back in. I didn't pick it up again until college. I randomly happened across a tournament and jumped in, starting my tourney career.
I was really cool. I was like, at first, oh no, am I going to have to get mad at Mike? No, because then he was like, oh no. I ended up liking it. Okay, good.
I didn't know you were a Guilty Gear partisan.
I like a Guilty Gear. I'm not like all up in it, but like I like a Guilty Gear just fine. Is a good game.
Yeah.
Which one is that?
Guilty Gear is the one with like all the metal music and everybody looks like they're from a hair band.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's the lady who actually attacks people with hair, and there's a dude who can attack people with like a pool cue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not the one with the random cat chick, right?
No, you're thinking of Darkstalkers.
Yeah, Darkstalkers is what you're thinking about. I like that one too.
Yeah, Darkstalkers is fun.
Yeah. Although it's like its inputs are so fucking weird, but anyway.
David, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I've built up immunity to this through the following mantras. 1, all marketing is lies.
Truth.
2, trailers always show the best bits.
Invariably.
Yeah.
3, get 3 reviews before buying.
Cool.
4, nothing is worth buying on day 1, and no one is pressuring you except yourself.
But myself is the person I have to be around the most.
Yeah.
So he's have kept me safe from the disappointment scourge.
Yep.
Yeah, and my answer to that is I just don't fucking pay attention to much of anything. So it's all good. The only problem is, of course, my answer. I do have an answer for this.
Oh, yeah.
See, I feel like the one that gets me is the fourth one, just because there's a lot of games that I like playing when they're new and people haven't learned the ultimate strategies yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You want to get in before the meta develops. Before people can yell at you for playing wrong.
Yeah. Well, and then too, like if it's a game that has a multiplayer aspect to it at all, a lot of people will already have the game like real quick, you know, real early on to its release. So like you want to jump in there and play with your friends when they've got it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a thing too.
Yeah.
If you play a co-op or anything.
Yeah. Jala, finish that with Michael.
Sure. I got Assassin's Creed Unity Limited Edition blindly. I had only seen the 3E
trailer. E3 trailer, maybe?
I think E3 is what he means. E3 trailer. They tried to mix the multiplayer into the story mode instead of its very own thing, like in Black Flag. That, all the bugs it came with, they gave me a free copy of Far Cry, but like the Creed is haven't touched it.
Yes. So I guess because Assassin's Creed Unity was so broken, Michael got a free game, but also hasn't touched that.
Because, because of the experience that he had with Creed.
Free game off the back of a free game is not bad. So,
yeah, for real. So even if you don't play it.
maybe they're just getting particularly meta and, you know, all of the, you know, nothing is true, including all of our marketing.
Yeah.
So my answer is probably too obscure to be relatable, but, coming off the back of Hotel Dusk, loved that game. The developer Sing, CING, released a game, called Again, that was less of a noir thing, but still a detective story. I'm thinking, hey, that'll be fun. I'm going to buy that. It's for the DS. You're solving murders and stuff like that. That game is horseshit. Like it is the quickest that like a single developer has squandered their goodwill. In my eyes, for me, I was happy I didn't play very much for it, but like going from a super stylish. Film noir kind of game that had very relatable characters and just a lot of good stuff to a very simple, like gimmick based thing where you're looking for differences between the left screen and the right screen was immensely disappointing. They redeemed themselves a little bit when I bought The Last Window, The Secret of Cape West, which is the actual sequel to Hotel Dusk. But yeah, Sing, you'd done me wrong. And if you can consider a developer's kind of prior art or prior work to be marketing, then yeah, that is absolutely a case of this.
Yeah. Well, you start building up, you know, a trust in a developer, and then they wreck it for you.
Yeah. They burn me. They burn me good.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
Yeah. So I think the biggest one is, I was, led to believe that this Stanley Parable was a good game.
Oh, Jesus.
More seriously, I think the big one for me was, I unfortunately believed Mo Nukes when he talked about Fable.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing that really frustrated me was, like, I realized that, like, the you know, thing where, like, he basically promised strong AI effectively, like, you know, photorealistic, like, historic, you know, historical world or whatever. Like, I realized that wasn't going to happen, but I bought it based on, like, if it just has the things he has already, or, and people have already said are already in the game. And that was not the case.
No.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And I still don't quite get how it's gotten to have, like, 82 sequels.
I mean, like, so the Fable 2 is okay. Fable 3 is kind of dog shit compared to Fable 2. And then everything else has been, like, weird attempts to revive it using the Kinect. Like,
nah.
Yeah. No, Molyneux could have been the cover image for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like... Some of his stuff, I'm a little surprised he hasn't gotten, like, taken to court or something. Because, like,
people have tried.
Oh, really? Because, like, a lot of his stuff, I would say, like, probably crosses the line.
Yeah. Huckster Supreme. Jala, how about you?
Well, we already established I don't pay attention to most, like, media release information. But hype from people whose opinions I value.
Uh-oh. However. Oh, no. I'm going to back away from this. I will get as far away as possible from tables. So,
yeah. So, yeah, you and Dennis both talking about Danganronpa and Virtue's Last Reward, both of those games, made me think that I was going to really like them. Now, to be fair, as much as I complained about Danganronpa, it was mostly because of all the tropes that were in it. But I actually liked it pretty okay. I actually was kind of even digging it a little bit until the end, and then that made me mad, and I just wanted to throw my Vita at that point. And that's the first time that I was talking about flipping tables was on that game. And then after that, I played Virtue's Last Reward, and that was my second mistake. Like, I had that problem with Danganronpa, and then right after that, I did Virtue's Last Reward, and that one made me real mad, and I'm sorry. That one, I like...
I'm across the room right now, Jala. I'm not in front of my microphone. I need to get away from you as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so that one did not sit well with me. It still does not sit well with me. But
yeah, no.
I'm
over here straightening up some shelves.
I liked 999. I like 999 though. So, like, I actually have, I think I have the third game in the series on my 3DS.
Oh yeah,
it was
a mystery purchase, right?
Like, don't I have that? And I have Danganronpa 2. I'm just, like, waiting to play one of those.
Well, zero. I'm sorry, I still need to be away from the microphone. Zero Time Dilemma was free on PlayStation Plus, so that's a lot of people could play that. It's very good.
So anyway, fuck VLR, and that's my answer. And hey, it's Cole's fault.
Is it safe to come back yet? Is it safe to come back yet?
It's safe. It's
okay.
Safe.
Yeah. Okay.
I got my fuck VLR out there. I'm done with that now.
All right. I knocked off my pop filter by getting away from the mic as quickly as possible. Let me put it back in. I knew you were going to do that to me.
Well, come on. I really don't pay attention to hype very much, except when people that I you know, and the thing is that like you had recommended a bunch of other games before that and every one of them like was a home run, every one of them was great, and then I don't know what happened.
Jala, perfection is a lot to expect of me. I've proven myself to be a small imperfect man.
Since then I haven't had anything that you've recommended that's made me mad.
You haven't tried anything that I've recommended.
Steins Gate.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So that's okay. I will accept this. I will move on. That is very funny. So Danganronpa, I steered you wrong.
It's not so bad. DLR, okay. However.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was talking about that. I was talking that up way before I talked up Danganronpa. So,
yeah. Like Danganronpa, I actually, like I said, I actually was kind of into it until the very ending. The ending made me mad.
Yeah.
But. Anyway.
Oh, well. So thank you, everybody, for participating in that. If you would like to get involved in those, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Monday afternoons to watch for the prompts to go up. Thanks to Jala and Dennis.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you were not here on the last episode we recorded, so I'm going to go to you first.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. So I've been doing a couple things, by which I mean pretty much two games. But
the definition of a couple things, okay?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, as you do. Destiny had their second faction rally, which basically just boils down to like a week-long event where you grind for new armors and shooty things. So this week I was I joined up with the Future War Cult faction, which are, as the name kind of suggests, just some weird cult that believes they can predict the future. Yeah, that I don't know. I shot things and got loot. That's basically Destiny.
I don't want to be a, you know, diminutive piece of shit. Like, I don't want to diminish what people enjoy. Isn't that a lot of what Destiny is?
Oh yeah, no, that's totally Destiny.
Okay, cool. Like, okay. Woo. Yeah. As long as you don't feel bad about it, nobody can feel bad about it.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I would say the positive thing with it is basically the way this event worked is you play like public events in kind of the open world area and build up renown, for completing them. And once you have 5 points of renown or however many points you want to do it with, you go and to one of the like solo areas and do a run through, and based on how much renown you have, you get faction points basically. But the kind of catch is that the more renown you have, that dramatically reduces the speed at which you recover health, and each time you die, you lose 1 point. So in the plus side, it does dramatically change the way you play the game by putting a lot of premium on like survivability and using abilities that will manually trigger your health regeneration, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that was was one of those things where it's like, I'm not, this wasn't like some massive game changing thing, but like it was fun to do for a change of pace.
Yeah.
So, other than that, I've just been kind of trucking away at Neo.
Okay. Yeah. You were playing that the last time we talked.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm trying to think. I just beat the Moth Lady.
Oh, that boss is super hard. I had a terrible time with her before I like figured out some kind of item-based exploit.
Yeah. So luckily for me, like I've significantly built my build around like I've got a lot of fire abilities.
Right.
So like the I know that that's a really weird boss, because on the one hand, like, a lot of her attacks are very, very telegraphed. But on the other hand, she has a lot of really cheap abilities that can one-shot you.
Yeah, and just the kinds of attacks that she does, you're not necessarily going to have a lot of resistance to them. And resistance is important because the way she attacks is very difficult to avoid in the first place. So,
right,
like,
exactly.
You know, a lot of the exploit that I had to do, not exploit, but, like, the preparation I had to do was basically going and grinding for particular wards that I could use, like ninjutsu wards to increase my ability to soak magic damage. Yeah, that was, right. That was a bummer.
Yeah, yes. And it's also too bad because, like, it's actually fairly interesting, like, from a semi-lore standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, she like a lot of the enemies and bosses, she is based on actual, not actual, but, you know, mythology, you know, different Omni,
right,
and
exactly
such. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so overall, you know, still really enjoying it. I have no idea what's going on.
Nah.
To their credit, like, I can tell they do a lot, put a lot of effort into like trying to make a lot of the cultural things, like, not opaque to people that aren't Japanese.
Right.
But you know, I think part of it, just like the names all seeming very similar and not knowing the overall course of history, like all I can gather is there's some warlord that tried to unite Japan and then died, and like now everything's gone to shit.
Yeah, I mean, like, so it's definitely based on periods of Japanese history, particularly, you know, Japanese feudal civil war, that a lot of other games have covered. Like, this is in the pocket of like Nobunaga.
Sure.
You know, is in relation to a lot of what you've seen, you know, so far.
Yeah,
it's just, it just rewards a lot of knowledge that, like, I didn't necessarily have going into it. You know, and I think we had Mai on, to talk about Neo on Bonfireside Chat. You know, she's from Japan, and she has a lot of background in this, and did a lot to explain the significance of the stuff that we saw. And I definitely had a real sense that I was missing out by not having just this basis of cultural awareness. Like,
yeah,
a lot of stuff had significance that I just was not absorbing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that wouldn't surprise me, because, like, I know from my end, you know, I can tell there's a lot of like the martial arts stuff is very, very authentic. And like, it has a lot of like a lot of the, you know, way you move or stuff like that has like the little stylistic quirks that are accurate to Japanese, you know, use of those weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I doesn't surprise me. And one thing that, you know, it seems like they're doing that I think is kind of cool, even though I'm not quite getting it, is it seems like they're doing, you know, kind of a cool thing where, you know, I don't think, like, any of the things that, you know, none of the random supernatural stuff that you're dealing with, like, ever actually overtly, like, contradicts history. You know, they're doing the kind of, you know, you're kind of playing around in the background type of a thing.
Yeah, this is the stuff that wasn't told.
Right, exactly. So one of the biggest things, though, that I found, which I wouldn't have thought of, is not understanding the stereotypes in terms of like for example, one of the commanders, like, is very clearly supposed to be like kind of a fop, you know, just kind of this like, you know, cowardly loser type guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I have no idea why, like, even after reading his history, like, he doesn't, like, it's not obvious like what that's based on. And I'm sure it's, you know, a Japanese, you know, just like how, you know, certain presidents, you know, have, you know, reputations and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but like,
you got your Woodrow Wilsons.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do enjoy my current guardian spirit, which is kind of your, like, you know, your charge up power attack and ability is a pair of adorable Shiba dogs.
Aww.
Which they're as I understand it, they're like in like the folklore, they're somehow related to like thunder. And okay. So they've got like on collars around their necks like little drums. So they're adorable, and it doesn't quite make sense that like pretty much everything else is like, you know, either something very much from like the Zodiac or like, you know, like a tiger or something, but these are just like adorable little dogs.
Yeah. Well, Shibas especially. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but they're not even the, like, I don't know the subbreeds, but there's like the different, you know, they come in like small, medium, and large. And these are very much the like extra small size.
Even better. Like, it sounds like you're trying to say that like diminishes them. No.
Well, more just, it's kind of weird that this is like my superpower.
David, they're all good, okay?
Yeah. So I don't know, I do enjoy, I like, I really like the way they handle William.
Yep.
You know, seems like they do, I feel like they do a really interesting job of like pretty accurately you know, depicting like when he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's kind of funny because I was wondering how they were going to handle kind of the white savior type thing. And I think it's interesting that from what I can see, they basically just play things completely straight.
Oh yeah.
Like the characters, basically their motive for you being here is like, I see you're very good at sticking pointy things in bad guys.
Yeah, he's very much being used by the forces that are actually in power.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And like, you know, and just things like you know, something I enjoyed is like, instead of doing what a lot of things do, and like presenting like, oh, the samurai are these like semi mystical, like, you know, warriors and katanas can slice through tanks.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, you know, they very much, you know, treat him as like, he's a European samurai. Yeah. Like, you know, like, you know, that's literally what it is. It's just, that's their word for soldier, which mm-hmm. is kind of the truth. You know?
Yeah, you're expendable. And exactly. If it works out, then hey.
So I do love that the ninja dude though, uses in order to determine how much time he has until like sunrise, mm-hmm. just proceeds to like pull a cat out of his cloak and like check how its eyes, like how its pupils like dilate to the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the A, that's adorable, and B, that's authentic, right? Like, that's a part of ninja myth.
Like, yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know if they actually did that, but like there is a lot of, yeah, like you said, a lot of myth that goes around that. And there was a lot of like, you know, kind of ninja punk, like, you know, a lot of technologies they did develop.
Yeah, I guess authentic to myth is a contradiction in terms, but it is not made up out of whole cloth.
Right. Yeah. Well, and my understanding of the history is a lot of it was like myths that they made up. Because, like, if people think we're completely crazy and have magic powers, they're like less likely to try to kill us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so just the whole thing, yeah, like, from a story standpoint, I'm really enjoying it. I feel like the gameplay a little bit, I feel like there's some elements where, and I think this is kind of a ninja theory thing, in comparison to Dark Souls, I feel like there's not completely a understanding that like complicated and difficult are not the same as challenging.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so just, you know, there's a lot of mechanics that are very much more, you know, more Twitch style than I think's necessary.
Yeah. I want to make sure we don't get a correction or people saying you said Ninja Theory. You mean Team Ninja. Ninja Theory is the Senua's Sacrifice people.
Oh, my bad. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's totally understandable. They're both very, very generic game studio titles.
But just to make sure I'm like Team Ninja was DMC and Ninja Gaiden, right?
No, Ninja Theory was DMC. Team Ninja was Ninja Gaiden.
Okay, I'm basically thinking of like a combination of my stereotypes of two different countries or countries. Companies.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, they're both Ninja Gaiden and DMC are character action games in a way that this kind of is, but it's mixed with Diablo and Dark Souls, so it's confused a little bit.
Yeah, I do think I'd be interested to hear kind of what you're feeling on was the Revenant system. I think's interesting, where you know, basically they're equivalent of like the Bloodstains from Dark Souls. In addition to like being very useful in figuring out what's going on ahead, you can basically choose to fight the person, and they'll drop a piece of their loot, and it makes it very easy to like ramp up your gear if you need.
Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting in principle. I never felt like I was I never feel like I have my head above water enough to take a risk at that. Sure. So even though I appreciated the fact that it was there, it never felt worth the risk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I've actually done it a fair amount, although part of that is just, a lot of like, hey, if I'm next to their equivalent of the bonfire, like,
yeah,
you know, that sort of thing. And I've also learned that like, there are some abilities that particularly abilities that manipulate stamina, the AI isn't good at dealing with.
Yeah.
But so I really enjoy that at least two of the enemies can straight up be defeated, quote unquote, by doing the right emotes at them.
Talking about the kappas and.
Yeah. So, does the bow work on kappas?
I think it does, but I could be remembering that incorrectly.
So I like from Japanese folklore, that's the thing. I have actually tried it. Yeah. I know their equivalent of the mimics are basically these like badger monsters that I guess in the lore, like they're not really evil. They're just playful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pop out and, like, will shapeshift into a person and do an emote. And if you do the same emote as them, they'll, like, be happy and, like, give you some items. If not, they'll, like, fight you.
Yeah.
But, there's also the wall monsters are the other ones. They're just kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I love those things.
Yeah, so yeah. I know it's I'm pretty excited for Neo 2. Like, despite having a couple of rough edges that I'm not a fan of,
also the fact that all we've seen of Neo 2 is an animated title.
Well, you know,
yeah.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm sure this isn't going to be it, but I am kind of interested in is you know, you have your guardian spirits and they're all like creatures from folklore, from Japanese folklore.
Mm-hmm.
But William is Irish and his guardian spirit is a creature from Celtic folklore.
Yeah, it's like a catchy kind of thing.
Theoretically, you could travel anywhere in the world and like have a Neo game, which would be kind of awesome.
Into that. Yeah, I want Aztec Neo.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a little Quetzalcoatl.
I'm really surprised we haven't seen like an Assassin's Creed or something like set in the Aztecs area.
It'd be real cool. I know Peru is an Aztec, but it'd be awesome to run around like Machu Picchu and stuff.
Any of those the Latin and South American cultures, like other than We've basically got, it's a great game, Abyss Odyssey.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yay!
Cool. So Destiny 2 and Neo.
Yep.
Cool. Is that all?
Yes, it is.
Cool. Jala, I want to hear what you've been up to.
Sure. So buckle your belts up, guys. Dum, dum, dum. All right. So first things first, I finished Persona 4 Dancing All Night.
You shared some very irritating screenshots with me over text.
Is this a dancing game? Like a rhythm game?
Yes, it is a rhythm game. So I've been playing it. The story mode remains dumb throughout. However, it does manage to do the whole Scooby-Doo, who's the real villain plot twist kind of thing, which keeps it in line with how the original game was, because it totally had the Scooby-Doo thing going for it. And, I played through all of the songs again once or twice in free dance mode, and I bought some different outfits. So the outfits. All right. It includes, like, the ones you can buy include stuff from the original game, including different ones. Like, you can get swim trunks for the guys, a Speedo for Kanji, because he wears the Speedo when they go to the beach, and everybody else is kind of like, dude, what are you doing? And
could be worse. Could be the loincloth things.
Yeah. And also, you also get to get special armor sets for the girls. The armor sets.
Nice. Let me guess which particular parts of them, the armor guards?
Right there. I just put it in the Slack for you to see.
Okay, so mostly around the nipples and the entrance. Okay.
Yeah.
To be fair, those are two areas you do not want to get injured.
Yeah.
One of these that is like okay is Risei's, because she's straight up wearing a belly dance outfit.
Yeah, she's got hammer pants on. It's fine.
She's got the tribal pants on. So, like, she's actually wearing a belly dance costume, and she is a professional dancer and an idol singer who does this for a living. So it makes sense like that. But, like, in the original game, you know, she is a support character and she doesn't fight. So she doesn't have equipment. So she didn't have armor in the original game anyway. So you wouldn't have seen that in the original game. But, like, they had her one because all the other characters had one. But the other characters have, like, a thong. And then, like, some kind of a top covering at least nipples.
These literally aren't even, like, boob plate. Like, what's the one? The chi or whatever? I'm pretty sure I've seen that in, like, at, like, for some street fair. Like, this isn't even armor.
Yeah, chi is very weird in that there's a lot of her cover. She's wearing, like, trunks instead of just, like, a straight-up, like, G-string or whatever. But she's got weird, almost like a Borat swimming suit
a latex type, like, fetish thing.
Yeah, except she's got hip windows, which is very strange.
Yeah, so, and also, guys, like, I've never thought of my belly dance attire being armor before. it's just a fucking gross distinction that they call this armor.
Yeah. It's fan candy is what it is. Like, it's, yeah.
What makes it worse, though, is that per Secret Agent Man, in the original game, none of the girls want to wear the special armor, and they say that they don't want to wear it.
Oh,
so it's
no.
against their will, and you are making them wear this outfit that they don't want to wear and be all exposed and shit.
Fucking gross, so, man.
Yeah, super gross. And then you can also buy DLC to unlock female bikinis and then the cross-dressing outfits for the boys from the cross-dressing festival that happened. And remember how gross that was when I talked about it?
Treated very dicily, yeah.
I say gross because they were treating it so terribly in the whole thing. So I was like, oh, that's terrible.
Which is weird because, like, isn't... My understanding is the Persona series is, like, known for being fairly progressive overall.
It's got a dicey kind of history, specifically with gender related stuff is the thing. Yeah.
And that's the main thing. So,
Jolly, before you move on, why did Naoto's kind of thigh high stockings have collars on them?
Naoto's, I don't know, because, like, she wears a colored shirt.
You gotta keep it classy.
Yeah.
Well, although, like, honestly, they force her to be gendered female all the time, although she is very uncomfortable being a she in the original game. And so, like, in my mind, she's actually trans, not supposed to be, like...
Right, that's one of the ones they backed off of, right?
Yeah, that's one of the ones they backed off of when I had that big rant that I went off about with this whole thing. But anyway, I don't know. Because Naoto originally dresses as a boy.
Right.
And is uncomfortable being referred to as a female.
Yeah,
so,
like, instead of having garters, she's got lapels, which is very odd. Yeah.
She hasn't popped the collar.
Well, anyway, so moving on from the grossness of that, anyway.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, all the characters, though, have specific songs that they're programmed to dance to and specific partners that will dance to those songs with them, and you can't freely select. Oof. So while I understand that they wanted the song and the dancer's personality to match up and stuff, it would have been way more fun and it would encourage me a lot more to play it if, for example, I got to see Kanji, who headbangs most of the time, thrown on the stage with, like, Yukiko's slow, girly music just to see what he would do. Like, WWKD, what would Kanji do?
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to know for real, what would he do if he was thrown in on that kind of a song or what?
Limiting that seems super lazy to me.
Yeah, it's really limited, and that's unfortunate because if I could play as any character with any song, I would totally intentionally play the same song over and over again with everybody just to see what their moves are, what they do differently, and all that stuff. So that's kind of unfortunate. But I mean, remember the last time I was talking about it, I said that I was having a problem, you know, like the moves didn't always make sense. Like the button pushes that they had me do and everything didn't always make sense. Eventually I sunk into it and it made sense. So that started jiving for me a little bit more. So the gameplay started making more sense to me. And then also, before I was like, the music's all right. I like some of the remixes now that I played it on free dance, but I think what was spoiling it is the fact that I was playing the dance offs during the terrible story. And the terrible story made me just like kind of generally sour on the entire experience. But once I separated myself from the story, the stupid story that was going on, and actually just played the dancing part, it was fine. Yeah, so then I actually appreciated some of the songs and they were cool. So.
I don't care how good these tacos are that I'm going to get. I don't they're going to be a little bit less good if I have to walk through a sewer to get to them.
Yeah. So, I think with enough time and distance, I will probably end up liking some of these songs. Like, they will be my jams and they'll be on my, like, workout mix and all that. But, you know, right at the moment, I'm just kind of like...
You need to forget their context.
What sort of style is this? Does it have... Are these, like, original compositions or, like, J-pop or...?
They are remixes of the songs from the game. So, okay. So, like, you know, from the Persona 4 game, there, you know, all the different themes that you have throughout there, they selected certain ones. A lot of those songs have words. They have, like, choruses to them and everything. Yeah. Like, your regular battle music has singing in it and things like that. So it's really easy for them to translate that into a remix that is, you know, dance music style for them to make this
auto-tune that shit.
Yeah. Like, Persona music in general is like really fun, glammy piano pop kind of stuff too. So
so I finished that. I don't have anything else more to say about that. I played it. If I really get an itch for some reason, I might go back and play the free dance mode, but I will never again touch that story with, like, you know, 50-foot pole. So moving on, though, I also played and finished the rest of Hakuoki Kyoto Winds.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if David knows anything about this. I've been ranting about it for a while, but I don't remember if you've been on it. Hakuoki,
what is Kyoto winning?
Kyoto is winning the war.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, Hakuoki, originally I played, it was a game that was released, David, like a long time ago. But this is a new version of it. And this version is apparently so massive that they had to put it into two separate games. So there's Kyoto Winds, which is the first half of the game. And then the second half of the story is in Edo Blossoms, which was another title released. So I have finished the first half of the storylines with a whole bunch of characters. So this version has some translation issues and some typos that I mentioned before. However, it now that I finished the entire thing, I can say that it is definitely an improvement over the prior iteration.
Right.
I 100%ed it. I saw all of the possible endings. There are 3 endings per character, and I don't even know how many characters there are. God. There's lots of characters. Is this the what?
Is this the, like, weird, like, splatter porn horror thing you were posting on the Slack?
That's the one I was complaining about. Corpse Party. I'll get there. Don't worry. I'll get there. That's last.
But there's one that's like that, but samurai.
Yeah, this is Hakuoki, the one that's blood and stuff. But it's not like, there's no weird sex stuff in this. It's just a story. Like, actually, it's funny. Corpse Party Blood Drive has more sexy stuff in it than Hakuoki does. And Hakuoki is supposed to be an otome game, which, you know, a sort of dating sim sort of thing. Yeah. But it's not. Like, it's all about the story of, you know, like the blood and guts and gore and the political stuff and the war and the folkloric stuff. And I don't know, there's a lot of things going on, and romance is really low on the list. So it's just ironic that there is just more sex crammed into Corpse Party.
hey, Jala, can you be tactical about when you use sex and cram in the same sentence?
No.
Phrasing.
So anyway, all right, moving on and talking about the game that I like first. All right, so I'm happy to say when I was playing through and selecting all the options organically as per what my inclinations were, I ended up with Okita's happy ending. And if you remember the first time I played this game a long time ago, I ended up with a bad ending and died alone. So I was like, hey, I ended up with somebody this time. And I also had some kind of romance level with Harada, Soma, and Yamazaki. And all of these characters are basically, their personalities and everything are in line with my personality as well as my tastes. So, like, I don't feel like the options that you're picking are just arbitrary. They actually do have something to do with, like, the personalities of the characters that you end up seeing the storyline for. That's very cool. I like that a lot. I'm very happy because this is probably the only game like this that I know of that I really feel that way about, like, that is of this genre. So none of the new scenes that were added for the original characters that were in the game, you know, before feel like they're forced. They feel like they offer new insight into the personalities of all of the characters, including Chizuru, who is your main female character. And the characters that you couldn't romance previously but were in the game as NPCs before, Sanan, Shinpachi, and Yamazaki, are written in a way that makes sense for their characters. So it doesn't feel like it's thrown in as an afterthought or like pandering to the audience or anything. It feels like organic, as if it was always there in the first place.
Right.
To the point that when I was playing through, I was like, were they actually romanceable? And I just didn't remember this. And then I saw some of the CGs. I was like, no, I've never seen this image before. Okay, no. Like, it made me second guess myself because it was so well written and it fit so seamlessly in there. So the new characters also have so much effort put into their storylines that I feel that they are also just as fully fleshed out as if they were always there as well. The only thing that I can say that could be potentially construed as being like a negative thing is that 2 of the 3 guys that are new are far more romantic from the get-go than any of the other characters are. And that might have been the choice because this game focuses so much on the war, politics, the situation with the Oni and the Rasetsu, that like love isn't the primary focus. And it's an otome game, so it's not appealing 100% as much to the people who are looking for like an otome game, you mm-hmm. know.
So, it's not, so are you saying that blood, that love cannot blossom on the battlefield?
I'm saying that love blossoms on the battlefield, but it takes second shrift, you know, to all the other shit. Like, okay, if somebody's pointing a sword at you and you were turned into a vampire creature, that's kind of a little bit more pressing. You know, like, so yeah.
You
like,
apparently don't read the same fan fiction I do.
I don't read fan fiction. Anyway, moving right along. There are two characters, and I really wanted to cover this point. There are two characters who are always villains in every storyline except their own. There are Chikage Kazama, who is an Oni Lord, and Ryoma Sakamoto, who is neither an imperialist nor part of the Bakufu, or the shogunate. He wants to bring democracy to Japan. And the big war that's going on is between the imperialists who want the emperor in power and the Bakufu who want the shogun in power. And it's a big power struggle at this time. And he is like a third party who wants to, you know, democratize Japan. So he's seen as a traitor. He's seen as a traitor to everybody. Like, the emperor sees him as a traitor. The Bakufu sees him as a traitor. Everybody sees him as, like, a double-crossing, terrible person because he's playing both sides and trying to, you know, like, weaken both ends of the party so that way he can introduce a new leader to bring democracy. So
it's kind of inciting a populist uprising so that he himself can assert power.
Although, like, he's not necessarily wanting to be, like, the head of the state or anything. He just wants to, you know, get people out of their archaic ways because he is aware of how Britain did China and what's going on in the world, all the different world powers. And he knows that Japan is not going to be able to have a footing unless they modernize and, you know, democratize and get out of their prior way of being, because that is no longer applicable in the world that they're situated in now. And so he's got like a global view of things, whereas everybody else is very much, you know, like Japan centric to the point that they don't even consider the rest of the world. They're just like, oh, well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like if Russia comes to you and wants to invade you with their, you know, black ships, as they're called in this game, then you with your swords are not going to be able to win against these guns, you know, like, that's just how that's going to work. And, you know, so he is more loyal to Japan as like a nation surviving in the world, whereas everybody else is just like, you know, loyal to their traditions, whichever ones they may be. So, Kazama, meanwhile, the Oni Lord, is shown as being an all-out horrible evil enemy. And both of these storylines do a really phenomenal job of just showing their perspectives well enough that even if you don't like the characters, you understand where they're coming from. I appreciated this really the most strongly with Kazama, the Oni guy, because he has added scenes, especially right, you know, like in this version of the game, that show him to be capable of warmth and kindness in a way that he's never been shown to have before. And as an Oni, to explain his point of view, Kazama is long-lived. He views political struggles as transient and the fighting to be pointless. He looks down on humans because they make all of these beautiful, wonderful things, and then they destroy them just as easily over power and money and, you know, all these other reasons, you know, selfish reasons or whatever. And he refers to the entire war that's going on as a footnote. He's basically cold and ruthless, but it's because he's so far removed from the human world that he has like a really strong layer of separation between him and humans. Like, he doesn't even see himself as being related. Mm-hmm. He's arrogant because he's so strong. You know, he's such a powerful demon that nobody else can touch him, even other Oni and humans and everything like that. And he has problems, but he also has that he will take the time to consider Chizuru's stance and gives her praise for her strength of heart and her loyalty, even when he thinks that she's wrong and like being loyal to the Shinsengumi or something. He will still, you know, praise her, even if he, you know, is like, no, you don't understand yet. And he's actually pretty sympathetic and patient and even comforting to Chizuru in a way that some of the other guys fail to be because they're so wrapped up in what's going on with them and with the shogunate and all of that. So I know I'm going on about it, but that's because I really hated his character in the original game. And in this iteration, they've done so much to make his motivations and his reasoning intelligible to where, like, he's not my favorite, but he's tolerable. You know, like, I can understand where he's coming from, even if he is a horrible, horrible guy for, you know, most of the rest of the game.
The remake made him a 180. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm actually really excited to play the second half of the story. It's been 3 years since I played the original game, and they've added so much to it that I'm excited, really excited to play the rest of it.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's cool. It's complex. I really would love to talk about all the individual things going on, but I've been posting copiously to Twitter. I'm sorry to all my Twitter followers who care, but, you know, like I make my funny comments about, you know, silly things that happen. And I also show some of the cool story beats as well. So they do a really good job with this game. So,
nice. Second half out? Like, is that something you can grab a hold of?
It's something that was released in March, so it is out. I can buy it. It is fine. I will get Edo Blossoms, and I will continue playing Hakuoki. So
cool.
However, in the meantime, I picked up Corpse Party Blood Drive again.
Knives out. You skipped you got past the ghost stealth.
Yeah, boy, was it rough to get back to this game. I went from this wonderfully improved and expanded iteration of a game that I really like. You know, I really love, actually. I got from that to, well, all right. This is about the point where you should probably get your popcorn. Okay. So I didn't tell you to do this,
so you can't flip the table at me. I'm just going to be over here.
Oh, no. This is not your fault. But also, like, you got to hear about this because, you know, you liked the first Corpse Party. You're in somewhere in the second game. You need to be yourself for this one.
Okay.
So I know I talk about it every time, but the Miiverse is really not the place for this game.
The 3D chibi designs. Yeah.
Because here's this anatomical model that's supposed to be all scary and shit, and here's me not being impressed by this me anatomical model chasing after you in the story. Like I linked an image.
It's on your Twitter. It looks like a little kid with half of his skin missing, which is a description that sounds fucked up and scary, but in the image it is decidedly not.
And not only that, but they had the modesty to give him some pants.
Oh, cool. Like, yeah, okay.
Why does he have pants on? I mean, he's an anatomical model. Well, whatever.
That's
anyway.
A shame.
So this game also should never have been dropped into Unity or turned into an action style game, at least not the way that they did it, because boy does it suck. Like this, the style is not working with this. Right now I'm in a part in the game when I've got two and three ghosts chasing me at once, and it's bad. It's just bad. And then the artist in this game apparently is different from previous and basically makes everybody look like they're 12, and it really doesn't work for me. Like the image that I show here does not look the worst ever. Like I'll have to pull up my Twitter so I can
What it reminds me of, sir, back when I did the original Corpse Party for Hexcrank, I thought, hey, I'll fire up the Steam version. And I got off Humble thinking it's going to be good. And then like everything was far more juvenile. I wonder if they got the same artist to do this.
I was wondering because they look like, I don't even know. They don't even look like they're prepubescent. They look like they're just like single digit numbers for their age. Some of them. So yeah. And somehow it ended up with all this weird sexual shit in it. Like, all right.
Those two things should not mix. Continue.
No, I know. That's why I put them in there. I told you this. So, all right. The cover art of Ayumi, right? Being subsumed into a flesh wall with a bunch of eyes staring at her and she's crying. Ew.
Who's that? Like, who's that for?
I don't know.
Not a person I want to meet, but it's just asking, who's that for?
No. And then one of the characters who replaced one of the people who died in Heavenly Host in the original game is creepy in this whole totally different way. Like, she just shows up in the middle of main dude's house and cooks dinner for him, and his mom, his sister, and Naomi all love her, and she just, like, is like, here, open up and say, ah, I chewed your food for you. Like, what is this? Who is
this? Hi, I exist to be a subservient fantasy for you. Hi.
It's terrible and gross. Like, what is that? What is that? It's like, it's not just off-putting, it's just gross.
Yeah.
And,
well, and then, it sounds like it squanders just a shitload of the tone, and even like the promise of like what happens when people get erased from history by the school.
Yeah. And so, okay, I have an anecdote about the last time I was playing. All right, so Ayumi and Yoshiki end up outside of the building. They are in the courtyard. Yoshiki saves Ayumi from a trap by pulling her away from it, from, you know, the trap bodily, all right? And of course, this means that he ends up falling on top of her. And right. She freaks out and starts screaming, no, I don't want this. Like, he's trying to force her into having sex or something. And it's like, how does that even make any sense? Because he was just saving you from a fucking trap. Like, what? And then after that, they go back inside and they're soaking wet, all right? And they find this conveniently clean and dry towel just hanging there. And so she grabs it and she's like, okay, here, you can wipe off first. And he freaks out. And then she eventually tells him, okay, well, when you're done, give me the towel and I want to dry my hair because it's like a wet mop right now. And then he's like wigging out and thinking to himself that, I don't know why I thought that she meant that she wanted me to rub her down. And I'm like, what? Where did this come from? What is this? And they have some sexual tension and romance going on between them, and they have since the first game. But this is like the new Heavenly Host in this game is like making them do weird shit that could potentially end up really fucking gross depending upon what they do with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not into it. Well, whatever this is happening right now in this game.
My inclination is to say fucking yuck, but like that kind of makes it sound like I'm doing the usual like, oh, anime's sex tropes are weird and off-putting to me. Like that just sounds like it'd be boring. Kind of like what's this add up to? Like who is this entertaining to?
Well, this is not what I'm in this game for.
No.
You know? Like, all right. Me going to this game, I want to see like the scary stuff. I want to see the tension. I want to have like all this stuff happen. The Miiverse and these weird little, you know, small children, you know, children looking people having all these weird conversations about sex things. It's very disconcerting and upsetting to me. Like, I'm not happy with that. And on top of that, the menu slowdown and the load times are really irritating. It's just like a second between things, but if you go out of the menu and then you need to jump back in for some reason, it feels like a burden because it takes a minute before it gets back in.
Yeah, you know, friction.
Loads back up. Yeah. And not that you're in menus a whole lot, but I don't want to be like, you know, I don't want it to be an ordeal to go and save the game or to check what name tags I've picked up or what the health of my characters is, because you have to go into the menu to see the health bar. You don't have a health bar on the screen.
Wait, so how does a health bar work? Isn't this a visual novel?
No, this one is not. This is an action style game where you hide, you pick up items, you can actually use items on things. There are ghosts that come after you and kill you. There are things that you can, like, you can run into stuff that will hurt you in the world and things. So, like, no, this is a little bit more action oriented, and you actually have to hide and dodge ghosts and stuff like that. Like, it's involved. And the problem is, it shouldn't have been this way. They messed it up when they did this.
Oh, so even from like a gameplay standpoint.
Yeah, even from, well, because right now I've got two, sometimes three ghosts follow me at a time around everywhere. And like, if they touch me, it just hurts automatically. Yeah. There's not like, you can get a talisman to make them instantly burn up and disappear, but then another one will come in their place, and you can't like replenish talismans. They're not just hanging out all over the place, you know?
Okay.
And So, like, you only come across them every once in a while, the talismans. And so the only way to really get rid of the ghosts is to go hide in a closet or something and then wait for them to leave and hopefully time it properly. And then they respawn anyway, so there's not really much of a point. And if you are in a small space and then you have three of them on you, that can fuck you up. So, you know, that's not...
That sounds terrible.
The one saving grace, though, is that, like, if you load the game, then... the ghosts reset from wherever they came from. So, like, there have been a few times where I was in a situation where I'm like, okay, I took a lot of damage from these things. I don't want to jack with it. And I just, like, load the game again and then play that part again. And then it'd be fine. I wouldn't even get hurt the next time because the ghosts are somewhere else. So, yeah, it's stupid. So, and there's also plot inconsistencies, okay? In the first game... at the end of the game, when Sachiko is gone, the spirits tell you that the school is going to rebuild itself and make a new Sachiko, who is like the nexus, the whole mastermind of this whole heavenly host hell world.
The little girl who's kind of suffering for the linchpin of this.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the school did rebuild itself, but the whole remaking Sachiko thing is out the window, and what they replace it with is so... it's so unnecessarily strange and complicated that I'm just like dying to tell somebody about it because it's crazy. It's just crazy talk. I'm just like, oh, I would have never guessed this in a million years that this is how you're going to be rolling now. Yeah. And it's just, it's nuts. I don't know. I want to tell somebody about it, but I can't without spoiling.
Yeah.
So they're basically trying to do too much with this game. Now, not only is it the main characters, but also there's these other groups. There's the Wiccan Institute and then the Martubas, and they want into Heavenly Host for reasons nobody has actually explained, and they have different powers and abilities that are also not explained, and there are enmities and rivalries that haven't been explained, and we've had to go back a bit in the Shinozaki family tree as well, like Ayumi's family tree as well, some of the storyline and stuff. And so there are a total of 11 chapters, chapter 0 through 10. I'm halfway through chapter 4, so I'm just a little bit shy of halfway through the game. By now, I should have an inkling of what's going on. You know,
yeah.
Halfway through the game, I should have an idea, but I don't know what's going on right now.
No, exactly. This sounds like horse garbage.
So I'm pretty upset. And I will continue to play it, and I will finish it in the hopes that they will turn it all around, but I'm really not willing to bet that they will. And it's sad because I really, really love the first game, and the second game is actually, you know, pretty decent with a couple of exceptions. So, like, I don't know what the hell they did. I don't know what they did, but they wrecked it. And it's a trash fire, and I'm just going to keep playing it until it's done so I can verify that it continues to be a trash fire. And when I'm done with that, no one else will need to play it.
go and witness.
Yes. So I was very upset about this.
Sucky.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I don't know. I, especially after coming off of, wow, this is such a great reiteration, you know, like a new version of this Hakuoki game that I like so much. And wow, I remember why I love this game and all this other stuff. And then I'm like, okay, Corpse Party. I remember I liked a Corpse Party. Let me go back into this game. I can get past that ghost. Holy fuck, what's going on?
They're going to flush the things I like down a toilet? I guess I'll watch out of perverse curiosity.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, there's more mention of like people wetting themselves. Like I think that is somebody's fetish in the designing group because like somebody else is wetting themselves now. So because that the whole having to go to the bathroom thing is like an ongoing thing from the very first game, and it like continues throughout all the games. It's like I don't know what the fascination is, but it keeps happening.
Like it makes sense for like a little kid, like, oh, they've got to pee, and you know that ends up being a, you know, in real life that is a pressing catastrophe that every parent or person who cares about the well-being of a young kid wants to avoid. But like if they just keep on going on with it, good God.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it is Yuka again who's having this issue at this particular point.
Yeah.
But I mean, and they try to chalk it off to like, oh, well, the doctor at the hospital doesn't even know what's wrong. All of us have been suffering these weird issues since we came back from Heavenly Host and things like that. Like, you know, they're trying to play it off like this is just an unexplained thing that happened as a result of the stress that they went through, which I guess could be a thing, but like they won't drop the whole bathroom thing. They really won't. Like it's just for some reason an obsession in this game. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Tell us something good, Cole.
Okay. So we've been going for a while. I only have one thing, and there's not an awful lot to say about it. The Luminous remake for the Switch came out, and I grabbed that. I guess not like a remake, but just remaster, re-release, etc. That is the kind of rhythm-based dropping block puzzle game by the guy who made Rez. Initially came out for the PSP, had a bunch of different re-releases, etc. The one that I played was on the 360. It is very good on the Switch, you know, as confirmed by the amount of time that I put into and continue to put into Puyo Puyo Tetris. The Switch is a very good system for portable puzzle games, etc. And Luminous continues having a very good charm, although I continue to be very bad at color matching combo based puzzle games. I am far more kind of predisposed to excel at Tetris based I'm filling all of the empty space puzzle games. But the music and presentation and kind of just weird little gameplay twist of Luminous and its kind of playhead mechanic continue to draw me back in. It is a ridiculous value for $15. I don't like talking about value when it comes to games, but $15 for a puzzle game that is tried and true. You already know if you like it, so just go ahead and grab it if you are predisposed to it. Just everybody who is listening to this should know, like, yeah, it's good and worthwhile.
Yay!
Luminous.
Good.
Yeah. David, you had a PSP way back when. Did you have Luminous?
No. I ended up, unfortunately, like, I moved on to other things before they started releasing decent games for it.
Yeah, pretty much Untold Legend or Untold Stories was all you had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, well, I have some other things, but this has been a long episode and I want to, solidify my opinions on them before I bring them to the panel. So how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Button.
The credit. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level number 248. Want to keep the admin short. If you have not already, go to duckfeed.tv/store and pick up the Diggity Duck Bundle 2. That is continuing to raise money for cool and good causes. Otherwise, leave ratings or reviews on iTunes and check out patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. You can watch me stream live at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. David?
And I guess you can... I don't really stream or anything, so I'm David.
I'm on Twitch under Jalachan. I'm in most places as Jalachan, but if you want to see my artwork, it's at Neon Skies Studio. And I have various social media accounts for that tag as well.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Okay, I only have one. It's Mr. Chicken.
I have three. I have three, although one of them I don't like as much.
Okay.
But I still wrote it down anyway because I know that you like it.
Continue.
So, fill me up like a carnival clown. That's my favorite. I'm rooting for that one. Lovers in a Dangerous Warframe. That's the one I don't like so much. Okay. And then bread printer.
Okay. So I just had one. I had Huckster Supreme.
Referring to Molyneux?
Yep.
Yeah.
I would vote for Mr. Chicken personally, but these have all been pretty good.
Jala, how do you feel about It's Mr. Chicken?
Mm.
No?
I don't really like it so much, but okay. You guys were so tickled by it. I mean, whatever. Majority rule, I guess.
David, how do you feel about Bread Printer?
I can go with Bread Printer.
Okay. Let's do that. That is one that we are all amiable to.
Okay.
Okay.
And that when we inevitably revive the pitch, that'll be the first episode, right? Yep.
Starch cartridge. Starch-ridge. Okay, well, I'm going to go and go to bed because I have a long day tomorrow.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day is a long day.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Night-night.